Welcome to People, Politics, and Planet, a podcast with people who are making a difference, who are part of a conversation to make our world a better place. I'm your host, Joanne Roberts. On this episode of the podcast, a conversation with Peter Bevan Baker, the leader of the Green Party of PEI. He's a patient and persistent politician who just might become Premier of PEI. Islanders vote in a provincial election on April 23rd, and right now, the Green Party is leading in the polls. It's an amazing story, really. Peter is a dentist who was running in his 10th election when 4 years ago, he won his seat and became the lone Green in the PEI legislature. Another Green was elected 2 years later. Just before this election was called, I spoke to Peter Bevan Baker in his office under the eaves in the attic on the third floor of an historic building in downtown Charlottetown. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Joanne.
It's lovely to see you.
Well, likewise.
You know what the talk is? That you could be Premier Peter Bevan Baker. How does that feel?
Well, I'm speechless, I suppose, is how it feels. People used to say that, a year or two ago, and I would laugh heartily at how outlandish and ridiculous that prospect was. But it's not really funny anymore. It's absolutely a possibility. And so I've had to personally come to terms with that likelihood. No, not likelihood, that possibility.
Yeah.
And that was an enormous head shift for me, from somebody who was a reluctant politician in the first place without any inclination that I'd ever get elected. I mean, you know what my history in that regard was. So when I finally did get elected, that felt like such a triumph of unlikeliness that I was, that's amazing. I'm now laying the foundation for 10 years from now, 20 years from now, or, when perhaps the Green Party PEI could become perhaps official opposition or something. And here we are within 4 years, top of the polls, with the distinct prospect of forming government. So it's been a huge mind shift for me. But you know what? It's one I'm comfortable with now. I can hardly believe I'm saying those words, Joanne, because I have to be. It would be irresponsible if I didn't imagine myself in that role. If you can't imagine yourself in a particular situation, then you're probably not in a place to take on that role. So I think I'm ready emotionally, and I've gathered around me some fabulous people who will ensure that I'm ready politically to do that. And it seems to me that Islanders are ready for that sort of change. So it's terrifying and exciting in equal measure.
So the writ hasn't been dropped yet, but we're expecting it will be. And you'll have an election in the spring. What are you hearing on doorsteps that tells you something fundamental has changed? Few people may know this, but I'm actually from here. Yeah. I was born in PEI. Even 10 years ago, the idea that we wouldn't have on PEI a liberal or a conservative government was unheard of. Even the New Democrats were having, were not being considered for government. So what has changed, Peter? Do you have a sense of it?
You're absolutely right, Joanne. There's a sort of, you inherit genetically your political stripe here. That's just the way it is. At least that's the way it was.
That's
the distinction that's really important to make. What has shifted? I mean, when I go and meet Islanders, as I do every day, sometimes formally, sometimes informally, I get a version of this sentence probably 10, 15 times a day. Oh, hi, Peter. You're doing a great job. Good luck in the election. I've been blank all of my life, or I come from a long line of blank, but this time I'm ready for change and I'm going to vote for you. So I hear that consistently and repeatedly, and not from young Islanders. These are people who have voted in, 20 elections, but for the first time are ready to step outside of what their traditional voting patterns have been. So that's what tells me that this is not a little blip. This is not, this is real and it's solid. It really feels that way.
So it speaks to a couple of things, looking at it a little bit from the outside now. It's, first of all, that winnability. The first win, your win,
was really important. Mm-hmm. And then it was really important you didn't blow it.
Yeah, yes.
So you had to be who you said you were going to be. I guess this is what I'm getting at. Do you sense that we hear a lot about the disillusionment with politicians and that people, nobody likes politicians and they don't trust politicians. Is that part of the change?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you see that expressed all over the world, actually, that disillusionment with conventional politics and politicians. And here on PEI, as with all things, I suppose, it was the right time and the Green Party was the right vehicle that Islanders now feel comfortable enough with that they would consider that as a viable, credible place to park their vote. And you mentioned earlier that the NDP has never really been a force here on the island. The Liberals are a third-term government trying to get a fourth term. That's a tough thing, even in the best of circumstances, when everything is aligned properly. And on PEI, almost unheard of. The Tories, who are, of course, the natural successors, at least traditionally and historically, that's the way things have gone here, have been sort of internally shredding themselves for ages, you know, 6-7 years. They've gone through, I think, 5 leaders in 6 years. So there was this opportunity that presented itself, and I happened to get elected at the beginning of all of those other bits and pieces moving, and established the Green Party as something that was a real credible alternative here. And I made a pledge. You mentioned about personality of politicians, and I sort of made a pledge to myself that if I was going to become an elected representative, as I did in 2015, I was going to be myself. I wasn't going to put on airs and graces. It was going to be sincerely, authentically, genuinely Peter Bevan Baker. And if that worked, great. If I did that and I flopped at politics, then I'll go and do something else, because there's a million other things, other ways I could contribute to my community. But people seem to dig that. They dig that I don't bullshit. I will give straight answers. If I don't know what the answer is, I will say I don't know what the answer is. And there's a sort of, it's not contrived. It's not manufactured. It's just who I told myself I was going to be. And again, it's the right time and the right place for people to resonate with that. So there's a number of factors here, some personal, some global, some island, which have contributed to the circumstance that we now face, you know?
I guess the other thing that people who aren't from here and who haven't seen the Green Party of PEI in action might think, oh, well, maybe Islanders are just much more care about the environment than anybody else. Mm-hmm. But from watching you, I would say that what has become obvious is, yes, you very much are grounded in strong environmental principles, but you're a party that is not just about the environment. I don't know how else to say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that was critical, and I think it's critical for Green parties anywhere if they want to see electoral success, is that we have to, and of course, it's always been a misconception and a prejudice that the Green Party is only a single-issue party. I understand that. Of course, our name is a double-edged sword. It's a beautiful thing to be associated with, because green is gorgeous and wonderful and all of the things that it is, but it can also be restricting in the minds of people who are perhaps not involved inside the bubble of politics as you and I are. So our name, you can suffer from that. And here on Prince Edward Island, we had to overcome many barriers to be in the situation we are now at the top of the polls, one of them being that misconception that we are a single-issue party. But having spent 4 years in the House and having been joined more recently by Hannah Bell, we've been able to talk, I think, intelligently and practically and coherently on any issue that has come up. So that sort of single-issue stigma is completely gone here. I never, ever hear that. And I think without having overcome that barrier, we would not be in the place we are. It was one of the critical things we had to do right.
So I think that's an important lesson for Greens across the country, but I think it is one of the things that maybe PEI will become sort of the breakthrough in showing that Greens can have and will speak intelligently and ethically on other issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've just come from an early childhood mm-hmm. education meeting, for example. You've spoken well on the situation with rent. I mean, it's not just about the coastline of PEI, which, of course, you've also been very eloquent sure. on.
Yeah. And I'm about to do an interview on the third quarter fiscal update and the implications of that for the business community. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. However, it's important that I say this, just in case anybody out there doesn't get this, Joanne, that in no way have we abandoned our core green values. And I spoke just this morning, actually, in an interview with Huffington Post on how important it is that the foundational things that keep our society and ourselves healthy and prosperous and well, clean air, good water, healthy soil, all of the elements that to which we are connected in this seamless continuum, which is what some people call the environment, that is at the core of everything else. And if we don't get that right, then it doesn't matter how good our healthcare system or our schools are or our transportation system or any of those other things. So it's absolutely built on that core green principle foundation of living within our environmental limits. But it has to be more than that, because electors, citizens have to be comfortable that you will govern well. And unless you can talk to all of those other issues and do it in an informed manner, then you won't win that comfort and people will not vote for you.
And it was those very values, though, that brought Peter Bevan Baker to politics, right? Oh. I don't suspect you came for all the other things, or you might have gone into politics earlier. But, I mean, you've run, and everyone knows this story, but you've run in 9 elections before you were elected in your 10th. So mm-hmm. was it those issues, those values that, am I right in saying, brought you to politics?
Absolutely. I mean, I started running, and it's no coincidence, just after my first child was born. At least for me, you look at the world in a different, from a different perspective when you have children. And it's not that I didn't think long term or, you know, what does the future hold, but it really brought it into sharp focus for me when I had kids. And looking ahead, I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like what I saw economically, environmentally, or socially. And we make the big decisions through politics. That's how we make the big collective decisions. And, you know, I really wanted to be a good dad. That was important to me, and I think I was. I was a very devoted and dedicated dad when my kids were young. But I could also see that that didn't really matter if the world in which they were going to have to grow up and the one that they would inherit from you and I mean, our generation has done a terrible job of living on this planet. And things had to be sorted. And you sort that through politics. So I decided very early on after my first child that I wanted to be involved in politics because I wanted to shape the big decisions that we make, because that was going to be fundamental to their well-being and your kids' well-being and our grandchildren, blah, blah, blah. So, that's what got me in politics, and that's what continues to inspire me every day. I have one grandchild now, so my perspective is even longer now than it perhaps was when I got into this.
Yeah, it was our first grandchild that the news that the first grandchild was coming that kind of just, I have to do something, so I get some of that. Now, you had a long career as a dentist. Did you learn something in dentistry that you've brought to politics? Mm. I mean, I heard you say recently, I didn't have to start another career, and that's true. But are you able to take lessons from the first career and bring it to the second?
Yeah, many, many. To be a good dentist, you have to care about people. And by that, I mean, of course, the patients who came to my office, and dentistry can be a you're screwing up your face there. For those of you who can't see this. So in order to make people feel comfortable, you have to have a really deeply caring personality, I believe, to do dentistry well. So I don't think I had to learn that, but I had to use that every day. I also learned to be a good leader, which was not something I ever thought was part of my DNA, Joanne. You know, I did my own thing, and I never imagined myself as a leader in any way. So to have run a dental office and learned the skills required to build a good team, find the right people, inspire them give them responsibilities and then leave them alone to do it. I mean, all of those things I sort of learned unconsciously, but it certainly set me up for the position I find myself in now, where my leadership skills, you know, spontaneous and untrained as they are really being called on every day. And I couldn't be the leader I am now politically if I had not learned to do that in my dental office.
You also have politics in your history. I mean, you know, some people may know, but you're related to a very famous Canadian politician.
Yeah, Doug Ford. No, I'm not.
That one, no.
I'm not. I promise I'm not. Yeah, going back, actually another, yeah, an Ontario or Upper Canada, politician. Way back, my great-great-grandfather came from Scotland, from Edinburgh, to Canada, actually originally to New York, but came with his dad to Toronto, started a newspaper, and then got involved in politics and became a very prominent person in the birth of our country. George Brown was his name.
Of the Globe and Mail.
Yeah, exactly. Founded the Globe and Mail and, you know, was absolutely central in the... I mean, we're sitting here in Charlottetown. I can look across the road right from where we're sitting here and see Province House, where the conversations at the Charlottetown Conference took place in 1864. And he was right in the middle of that. Indeed, without the sort of gentleman's agreement that he and John A. Macdonald made back in Upper Canada, they would never have come here, and perhaps Canada would never have been. So I was sort of unaware of that, Joanne. I knew that there was a Canadian aspect to our family's history, but I had no idea how important it was. And it was only actually after I arrived here and started to do some research on it. Oh, my God, this guy, you know. And I think he'd be sort of looking down or wherever he is, smiling at what's going on here, at, you know, his great-great-grandson having, because he was shot and killed. And his wife, who was also Scottish and never really settled here in the way that he did, took the two kids, two daughters, back to Scotland. So that Canadian connection was severed very suddenly and permanently until I came back here. So there was no, there was nothing between when he died in the late 1800s and me coming here and whenever I did, to sort of connect that thread until politics came along. So it's just weird, you know, but delightfully weird.
Delightfully weird. And some would say maybe the universe smiling on all of us. So let's talk about the big picture, because I'm sure George Brown had a vision of what would happen if he came here, made a deal with John A. Macdonald and convinced Upper and Lower Canada and a few of those outlying provinces to form a confederation. But I'm sure he didn't quite see what we call Canada today. So it's hard to look into the future. But do you see what it could mean if here on little old PEI that we love so well, if we ended up with a green provincial government, what could that mean in terms of changing politics in this country?
I think it would be profound. And that responsibility weighs heavily on my shoulders, Joanne. I can't pretend otherwise. But we're struggling in this world to find new ways to live well in a changing, not just by environment, I just don't mean environment, I mean in every, you know, socially and economically and environmentally. Things are very perilous and we're on the edge of something very dangerous, I feel. And so we're struggling to find ways to cope with that. And I think a green government on Prince Edward Island, not to overstate this, Joanne, but I think we could demonstrate a different way of living well in the world of today, to be a sort of beacon of, well, and I'm thinking here specifically as I answer this question about growth everlasting and that ridiculous notion that, you know, that is the way that we need to move forward and forever into the future. And clearly, at some point, that has to stop. And I hope it stops before the whole thing comes crashing down. And I think here on PEI, for a number of reasons, the character, the history, the traditions of this place lend themselves to living more simply, to deriving meaning and pleasure from life, from things other than material possessions. Mm-hmm. You know, the history here has always been of living in community, helping your neighbor. You grew up here, you know
a little bit about that.
People don't aspire to massive houses and four cars and swimming pools and all of those things. So the idea that we can live well without destroying the planet is not a foreign concept to islanders. So I think it could be profound, not only for the island, but I think for a much wider swath than that. So that does, it really excites me that, you know, we could do something special here.
Well, not to put too much pressure on, but we're all counting on you. Thanks so much for this.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Joanne. Thank you.
Peter Bevan-Baker is the leader of the Green Party of PEI. This interview was recorded about a week before the writ was dropped in the current election. The provincial election will be held on April 23rd. I'm Joanne Roberts. People, Politics, and Planet is produced by the Green Party of Canada. Thanks for listening, and don't miss a single episode of this podcast by subscribing at wherever you get your podcasts.